The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, the online news editor of Science, is here to fill us in on a few of the stories that appeared recently on our daily news site. Well, David, geese, bats, and spiders, a real creature feature today. Shall we start with the mammals?
Yes, we shall. Let's start with the bats. And what's interesting about bats, and also kind of bad about bats, is that they spread rabies, mostly among each other. But in the U.S., they also infect 1 to 2 people every year. Now, that may not sound like a lot of people, but rabies is almost always fatal. So this is a very serious disease. And for a long time, scientists have wondered how bats transmit rabies so well and why the virus doesn't kill the bats. It eventually does, but why it doesn't kill all the bats off before they can spread.
So they can be carriers for a while before they die.
Exactly. And the mechanism's been kind of unclear up until now. In this new study, researchers followed bats in Colorado during a 5-year field study. So they really looked at these guys for a long time. They watched their behavior. And what they found is that hibernation seems to really be key to spreading rabies. And the reason is because, as I said before, rabies would normally kill bats very quickly. But if the bats are infected before they hibernate, when they actually hibernate, the virus kind of hibernates as well. So these bats can harbor the virus for a long time. And then when they emerge from hibernation, a couple things happen. First of all, they're emerging from hibernation in the summer. They could be potentially attacking people during that time, although that, again, that's extremely rare. But they still have the virus in their blood, and they aren't dead yet to pass that virus along. Also, an important thing that happens in the spring, right after the hibernation ends, is that females leave their hibernation roosts for colonies where they go and give birth and raise their young. And these colonies are full of bats, and these bats are grooming each other, nipping each other. These are really ideal conditions for the bats to be transmitting rabies among each other, which really keeps the virus going.
Was this an observational study, or was it modeling? How did they do this?
It was observation. It was also modeling. And the interesting thing the researchers found with the modeling is if they took hibernation out of the picture, so they worked with the model to say, okay, what if the bats didn't hibernate? Both the bats and the virus went extinct. So hibernation is very important for the bats, but it's also very important for the virus.
Okay, and next, an epic migration for some geese. These sound like rather remarkable animals, actually.
Yes, definitely. These geese, at least according to one of the authors of this new study, have the most extreme migration on Earth. And the reason she says that is because way up in the Himalayas, and this is a mountain range that has some very, very tall mountains, including Mount Everest, hikers up there will sometimes observe bar-headed geese honking their way as they ascend powerfully overhead. Now, these are incredible.
So the hikers are sitting gasping for breath,
exactly.
And the geese are just
sort of flying overhead.
So
not only is this a very high ascent that the geese have to make as they're migrating from their summer breeding grounds in Central Asia, but the geese also seem to be making this ascent very quickly. In fact, in the study, the researchers found that the geese are ascending 6,000 meters in just 7 or 8 hours, which is basically a vertical ascent of 1.4 kilometers per hour, which would kill a person to ascend that quickly. And this is an ascent these animals are making every year. And up until now, people have thought, well, the geese must be getting some sort of help with this. There are some pretty strong tailwinds that occur in this mountain range, and perhaps the geese are waiting and harnessing these tailwinds to help sort of push them up over the mountains. But that's not what the researchers found here. In fact, they found even more impressive than this migration and this ascent that the geese are performing is that they're actually doing it under their own power. And this was, again, an observational study. The researchers here actually captured geese and they tagged them with satellite trackers so they could track when they were migrating and how long the migration took and what heights they were reaching and things like that. And in addition to the figures I cited just a couple minutes ago in terms of how high and how fast they're ascending, the researchers found that, surprisingly, the geese were making their journeys typically at night or in the early morning.
And why does that make a difference?
That makes a difference because actually the tailwinds are not very strong during this time of day. They're actually much stronger during the daytime. And so the geese are not flying during a period where they would be able to harness tailwinds, which strongly suggests that they're getting over these mountains using their own power. They're not really relying on Mother Nature to help them along. And the reason the researchers think the geese are traveling at this time of day is because temperatures tend to be cooler at night and in the early morning, which would help dissipate body heat. There's also more oxygen available during this time of day. So they are still getting a bit of an assistance from Mother Nature because they're flying at more ideal times of day. But really, this is an incredible migration because the geese are using their own physiology and their own muscle strength and their own oxygen reserves to get over these mountains. They're not relying on an assist from the wind.
And finally, turning to the arachnids, it sounds like we have some scuba diving spiders on hand
here. Yeah, this is actually my favorite story of the lot. This story concerns a tiny brown spider known as Argyroneta aquatica, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. This is a spider that lives in ponds in northern Europe. And what makes this spider so extraordinary is it's the only spider in the world that spends its entire life underwater. And the way it does this is scientists already knew that these spiders weave these almost what they call diving bells, which are basically these sacks of air that they weave from their silk, and they fill them with oxygen and they bring them underwater with them. Really incredible. And there's some really cool pictures of this you can actually check out on the site. So that was all known. But until now, researchers thought that the spiders had to be constantly refilling these sacks, that they could only fill them with a limited amount of oxygen, would bring them down. And when the oxygen ran out, they had to keep on going back to the surface, refilling them with oxygen. Well, fortunately, a group of researchers, or in this case, a pair of researchers who were really fascinated by these spiders. They went out, they captured some of these spiders, brought some of them back to the lab. What they did was, thanks to advances in technology, they were able to utilize a tiny fiber optic oxygen sensor, which is called an optode. And this sensor is only about 15 microns in diameter. And what the researchers could do with these optodes is they were small enough that they could actually poke it through the webby membrane of this diving bell without messing up the diving bell.
And wow.
It's pretty cool. And this sensor was actually able to measure how oxygen and other gases move through the diving bell surface. And what they found, what was really amazing, is that these diving bells function kind of like fish gills underwater. So yes, the spiders fill them with oxygen on land and bring them with them underwater. But when the spiders suck oxygen out of this diving bell, the diving bell is actually able to suck oxygen from the water and replenish itself.
How on earth does that work? Do they know?
The researchers don't know exactly how it works. Again, they're thinking it works a little like a gill, and through the process of osmosis, basically when the oxygen is sucked out of the bell, the bell is trying to somehow replenish its oxygen supply and is trying to suck oxygen from the water and is actually able to do this. The upshot is that the spiders are actually, instead of constantly jumping out of the water and trying to refill their bell, which is what scientists thought earlier, the spiders are actually able to stay underwater for up to 24 hours. And the only reason they have to go back up is not really because the bell runs out of oxygen, but because the water pressure is so great that eventually over that time period, it tends to crush the bell and the spiders have to go make a new one. But what's really cool about this is that, A, it allows the spiders to be underwater for a long period of time. And that's really where they're doing their hunting. They're also spinning these webs underwater that catch water fleas and other organisms. And by having this constant supply of oxygen, they can bring their diving bell with them, take a suck of oxygen, hang out for a while underwater, weave their webs, do some hunting. When they run out of oxygen, return to the web. And so it really allows them to spend most of their lives underwater, which is pretty incredible.
Well, David, what other stories are you looking at for Science Now?
Well, Stuart, for Science Now, we've got a story about nicotine and weight loss, understanding why smoking actually helps some people lose weight, even though it's got other problems, obviously. And also a story about a new way to prevent strokes using magnetic fields. For Science Insider, we've got a story about a patent fight over a commonly used HIV test and the impact that could have on academic research. Also, the latest on the E. coli outbreak that's currently roiling Europe and what scientists are contributing to trying to figure out what's causing the outbreak and how to resolve it. Finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's chat is about finding alien life within our own solar system. Scientists have, in recent years, really been looking beyond our sun to find alien life in these exoplanets that we've been finding light years from our sun. But there may be life on Mars, Europa, Enceladus, a lot of other worlds within our solar system. So we'll have a nice chat with two very prominent experts in the field about that topic. So be sure to check out all these items on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog Science Insider at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.